Hi everyone, Sam here. Thanks for listening to the Policy Dispatch. Before we get on with the show, just a quick word on how you can access the rest of our unmissable and informative journalism on Foresight Climate and Energy. If you'd like to enjoy premium access to this or any of our other podcasts, as well as our in-depth articles, you can. You can try us for 30 days for less than €1 a day, which will give you access to our website and app. Just follow the link in the show notes or go to www.foresightmedia.com to find out more. Join our global community of listeners and readers today to stay informed, entertained, and in the know about all things climate and energy. Hello and welcome to the Policy Dispatch. I'm Sam Morgan, your host and chauffeur for this scenic drive through the fascinating landscape that is the energy transition. Transport is a massive part of the decarbonisation picture. What used to be a sector that was somewhat on the periphery of the energy transition is now quite clearly fully immersed in it. Moreover, many of the policies geared towards making transport greener and cleaner will have a marked impact on the rest of the energy system. Nowhere is that more clear than in road transport, where electrification is proving day after day that it is the only common sense option for most vehicles. The technological argument has largely been won. Now comes arguably the most difficult part: optimizing and fine-tuning all the figurative and literal nuts and bolts that underpin e-mobility. In today's chat with Ivan Asen Ivanov, Energy and Climate Policy Officer at Eurelectric, we discuss a brand new report that delves into issues like data sharing, interoperability, smart chargers, and more important factors that will dictate the pace of transport electrification. 2024 is set to be a crucial year for e-mobility, and getting these issues right will be all important. Before we get into the discussion, just time for the Policy Dispatch quiz question, of course. Today I'm asking you, according to data compiled by the European Automobile Manufacturers Association, the Netherlands has the most electric car chargers per 100 kilometres, with more than 64 charge points on average. Luxembourg is second with 58, Germany third with 26. Which of the EU's 27 member countries ranks bottom of the list with the fewest number of chargers per 100 kilometres? Is it A, Lithuania, B, Cyprus, C, Greece, or D, Italy? Answer as always after the show. So Ivan, many thanks for joining me today to chat e-mobility and where data fits into this particular aspect of the energy transition. Maybe just to start off before we get into the final details of Eurelectric's new report, could you perhaps just give us an overview of where electrification of road transport currently stands in Europe? We're rapidly hurtling further and further into 2024. It's March when this episode goes out. So where do we currently stand on things like uptake, infrastructure build out, and so on? How rosy a situation is it at the moment?
Yes, indeed. Thanks a lot, Sam, for the invitation. I'm very happy to have this chat with you. Our report is indeed something that we consider in the context, the wider context of the entire e-mobility ecosystem world and the state of development in which it finds itself. So we do see quite a lot of dynamism in this field. We see that electromobility is quite buzzy. It is one of those topics that everybody wants to talk about, and everybody seems to have quite a lot of opinions on. And this is one of the reasons why we find ourselves often in a situation where we have to bust some myths or really to talk about some of the basics of how electromobility works and where we currently stand in terms of the advancement of that clean tech revolution. It's indeed that e-mobility and electric vehicles are a clean tech. It's something that maybe we forget quite often, since it's reached already a certain state of maturity, and it's maybe not one of those new technological inventions that make us all go super excited for a new future, new green future. But electric vehicles have been around for quite some time, and I think that we do have a lot of positives and a lot of success stories within the electromobility transition that we can showcase, and that really go in a little bit of a paradigm paradoxical way when compared to the overall sentiment, at least politically, that we're seeing now that we're finding ourselves in the time ahead of European elections. And we see a lot of European and national level policymakers maybe being a bit hesitant when it comes to the transition towards electrified transport, that maybe they find themselves a bit in a pickle when it comes to explaining to their electorates on why electric vehicles are the way to go. So indeed, we do see this as a little bit of a contradiction, because both in terms of EV production and EV sales, we've had consistent data over the past years that shows that the penetration of electric vehicles in the market is very high. It is really something that is in an upward trajectory. And interestingly enough, infrastructure that serves these electric vehicles, charging infrastructure most notably, and the connecting clean power that is servicing these electric vehicles and the grid that is facilitating that energy delivery, all of those are also moving at quite a dynamic and positive trajectory. So all in all, I must say that we, in terms of market, in terms of overall outlook, we are in a positive state. Also, various other elements that relate to electromobility, like batteries, global competitiveness, those issues do remain, but we are very much on track for some good advancements here, as long as we do not see any backtracking on what has already been negotiated in terms of Green Deal provisions and what we see as the enabling factors for this EV revolution.
This positive situation that e-mobility finds itself in, then, is that kind of proof of regulation and legislators getting it right in a way, that we are in this good position because the rules and the framework has provided this clarity that obviously industry is always calling out for, and we're finally in a good place with that?
Well, I would say that it is not entirely thanks to the regulatory frameworks that e-mobility is a success. Sometimes it's despite regulatory frameworks that e-mobility is a success, and thanks to really market dynamics and the fact that this is a community of very excited players. Everybody who participates in the e-mobility ecosystem knows that this is a revolutionary field, knows that they're doing really big sweeps in terms of decarbonizing the transport sector, which, as you know, according to EEA data, is responsible for around 25% of the global GHG emissions that the EU produces. So, in a sense, it is a dynamic field that gathers a lot of excitement from those who participate in it. And this sometimes overcompensates for the lack of maturity when it comes to how the regulatory frameworks are set up. This being said, though, we have seen really some good wins when it comes to electromobility, at least on a European level, and at least on European legislative framework setup. So we've had during the past mandate the finalization of AFIR, which is the Alternative Fuels Infrastructure Regulation. This is a super important piece of legislation that is practically paving the way for the rollout of charging infrastructure across the continent. We're seeing that and there's going to be every 60 kilometers across Europe's main roads a public charging station. This is crucial so that we can make sure that consumers are a bit eased when it comes to their range anxiety, which, as you know, continues to be one of the most pertaining issues to electrified mobility. So the more we work in that direction, the better it will be. Of course, AFIR, as a lot of EU legislations, is a little bit of a paper tiger for the moment, as we often say, because it is negotiated, is written down, adopted, but the implementation phase is the key. And that's the cornerstone where we're going to see if this will indeed end up being a success story. There's still a lot of discrepancy when it comes to the charging infrastructure across different regions within the EU. Southeastern Europe, most notably, is still lagging behind. And based on the previous Eurelectric studies that we've done, we know that around 70% of the charging infrastructure in Europe is located in only 5 countries. So this continues to be an issue, and this is something that we need to address. But at the same time, again, in the light of the positive narrative, Cardiff. What our latest report from 2024 shows is that already a lot of member states are far ahead than what AFIR targets are requiring. So we do have the positive trajectory. It's just a question of making sure that we gather ourselves around these positive solutions and move forward. Also, a big, big stimulus for the adoption of electric vehicles is the CO2 standards for cars and vans, which was adopted over quite a controversial, I might say, even culture war infused debate on the European and national level state. But happily, we have that now in paper, even though there is this famous exemption for e-fuels that was practically what sparked the entire debate and was threatening to torpedo the entire adoption process of the legislation at the last moment. But we are happy to see the 2035 effective ban on internal combustion engines, because this is the clear market signal that makes all the players very calm when they're transitioning their entire operations towards electrified mobility. Electrifying transport from an industrial outlook is something that requires a lot of anticipatory investments. It requires a lot of strategic foresight, which if the right policy regulatory signals do not support, then it's a very risky move. And now that we have this ban, it's super crucial for us to make sure that it stays there, that we make sure that we eradicate from the public debate this notion that we can reverse on the European Green Deal or in certain major wins that we have had during this mandate.
That's really going to be one of the big issues for 2024, I guess, is this making sure culture wars don't inflict any particular long-term damage on these kind of issues. I mean, there's a lot of positivism that you kind of mentioned there about the trajectory for electric vehicles with the charging and also just sheer adoption rates by motorists as well, I guess. If we could just sort of get in maybe into the more finer details, because it's almost as if we're at a stage now where we know what this industry is going to look like, what it needs to look like. And now it really is about making sure those details, the devil in the details, are actually fit for purpose, right? And the meat of today's episode is this new report that Eurelectric has produced with EY about data interoperability in the electric vehicle sector. Could you maybe just give us a general outline of what this study aims to tackle and the main issues it looks into, and perhaps how it links with some of those issues that you already mentioned about the big picture?
For sure. Yeah. The reason why we focus for this year on data interoperability is the main topic of research exploration together with EY, is that we see this as one of the low-hanging fruits for European companies to tackle and thus gain a competitive advantage in something that seemingly has been overlooked, in particular data sharing and open data markets that allow for this free flow of data that will in fact enable a lot of the different players in the field to gain on the long term a very, very crucial advantage compared to other regions of the world where maybe the level of maturity of data interoperability is not that high. So to perhaps put this in a context, the reason why I mentioned competitiveness is that it is clear that Europe is in a global struggle for EV primacy together with China and the US. This is perhaps the elephant in the room. This is something that is unavoidable for us to understand and to work with. But at the same time, the fact that we see other global players being far ahead in terms of EV adoption doesn't mean that there aren't things that we can do already to gain an advantage. And perhaps if it comes to outright manufacturing capacities of electric vehicles, it will be hard for Europe to tackle the US and China. But those finer, more optimized parts of the ecosystem, these are the areas where we could really shine, where innovative solutions are going to be the key and are going to be the impetus that allows us to harmonize our system. So data interoperability perhaps is something that not many people who immediately think of the EV world perceive as a challenge, but it is indeed a challenge. If you, for example, are an EV owner and you have whatever type of electric vehicle that you want to plug at a charging station, a public charging station, this public charging station will have almost no information about that vehicle. It will have no information about the type of battery, no information about the car brand, no information about the age of the battery or various different specificities around that vehicle. Mm-hmm. And hence, that charging point operator will have to guesswork most of that really provide a non-tailored service for the charging of that vehicle. This, in turn, makes charge point operators working a little bit in a blind spot when it comes to how they develop their own infrastructure, how they optimize their own processes in terms of clean power delivery to those charging station and grid capacity facilitating to those charging stations. And that, in turn, makes them less able to communicate with district system operators, with the grids, to make sure that they provide accurate information of when peak loads happen, of when, for example, more innovative technologies like vehicle-to-grid come into use and what level of maturity they are, which overall also halts the ability for municipal authorities to predict where exactly peak loads within the grid are going to be so that they can address those in advance. So these are these finer parts of the functioning of the e-mobility ecosystem that are still not as optimized as we would like them to see it to be. And the question here is, how do we solve that issue? And together with EY, we're looking forward to a future for electromobility that is completely digital. This is clear. The future of electromobility is connected. Vehicles will be connected vehicles. Charging points will be digitalized. The grid will be digitalized. This will happen because the market demands that and because the market cannot operate without that happening. The question here is how enthusiastic and how aware we are as players in the EV ecosystem that this is going to be our competitive advantage so that we can preemptively make sure that that digitalization happens as quickly as possible. Because if we rely on market dynamics to force us to reach that state of maturity, it is going to happen, but it is not going to happen on our own terms. And I think it is good for European business to make sure that this happens on our own terms. And in terms of that digitalized ecosystem, what we need to see is something that we quite often talk about at EuroElectric, is a digital copy of the grid. We need to make sure that the grid is available as a digital version of it, where all the congestions and all the future bottlenecks within it can be identified. Also, we need to make sure that these connected vehicles allow for the data that they create to be freely shared with charge point operators that can then provide a more tailored service that can then be used within that digital mapping of the grid and allow municipal authorities together with policymakers to create better frameworks and better anticipatory investments on how to tackle these issues. So if maybe I can sum it up in a very succinct way, it's a question of making sure that we're future-proof as EV ecosystem operators in Europe. And if we do this future-proofing now, it is going to allow us to move past these short-term gains that gatekeeping data today provide us in return for these long-term benefits that this will unlock.
Hi everyone, Sam here. Thanks for listening to the Policy Dispatch. Before we get on with the show, just a quick word on how you can access the rest of our unmissable and informative journalism on Foresight Climate and Energy. If you'd like to enjoy premium access to this or any of our other podcasts, as well as our in-depth articles, you can. You can try us for 30 days for less than €1 a day, which will give you access to our website and app. Just follow the link in the show notes or go to www.foresightmedia.com to find out more. Join our global community of listeners and readers today to stay informed, entertained, and in the know about all things climate and energy. The report is a really fascinating read. I've had a look as well, and I'd encourage all the listeners to have a look as well. There'll be a link in the show notes and things like that. And it really does demonstrate the complexity, but also the interwoven nature of e-mobility into, I think, the energy transition in general. We're no longer talking about cars just being transport. That's it. You put fuel in them, they don't affect the rest of our energy system. That's obviously not true. But this report obviously really dives into that. Just a few points that I thought were super interesting. Do you see e-mobility now as a real sector that could unlock the full potential of things like smart grids, smart charging, where you know, factors like optimizing charging based on grid restraints, how much renewable energy is available, not just for vehicles, but also appliances and households and businesses. E-mobility could really be the thing that really drives that into the mainstream in a way. Do you think that's fair to say?
For sure, Sam. I think it's very crucial what you mentioned, that electric vehicles are no longer this old concept where you just have this vehicle completely disconnected, you just put some fuel in it, and that's it, you're done. Electric vehicles are much more complex than that, and the synergy that we're going to have to reach between the energy system and the automotive system is quite crucial here, because these synergies are going to be created by us. They're not existent currently, and the level of cooperation between automotive and energy industries is not that advanced yet, but it will be something that we need to construct. And indeed, grids are one of the main questions there, and their smart capacities and their possibilities to integrate smart charging and their possibilities to integrate also electric vehicles as this key piece of the puzzle when it comes to more renewable energy penetration within our system, because that will mean that EVs are going to be used as flexible assets for the grid. We're going to be able to use those batteries within the electric vehicles as a storage capacity that will allow for this non-dispatchability of renewables to be tackled in a much more coherent way. Of course, for this to happen, it means that we're going to be looking more towards a future where electric vehicles are much more widespread. So according to the projections that we have at Euro Electric, there's going to be around 130 million electric vehicles on Europe's roads around 2035, which is going to then continue towards around 250 million electric vehicles around 2050. So these are huge numbers of electric vehicles. And according to our projections, also, we're going to need around 150 million chargers to actually service those electric vehicles. So you can imagine that this creates a massive system that has a lot of potential, together with the challenges of building all that out. Mm-hmm. There's the potential for that to become an inseparable element of a future connected and optimized energy system. So indeed, we do at Euro Electric, as the Electricity Industry Association, see the vast potential of EVs, and we look forward to the further development of technologies like V2G, vehicle to grid, or a V2X, a vehicle to everything. So basically, it means that the vehicle is connected to your smart home, it is connected to the grid, it is a fully usable asset for the energy system. And the question here is that we still have a lot of elements to solve, especially when it comes to the heavy-duty vehicle aspect of things, which you mentioned a bit earlier, because heavy-duty vehicles, as you know, have larger batteries. Hence, this provides even better opportunities for them to be used as assets for the grid. But the key question that we still haven't solved here is, what do operators of these vehicles stand to gain from participating in the energy system? So currently, there are no monetary incentives for for-profit companies that most of them actually operate heavy-duty vehicles. These are not charities. These are companies that are looking after their profits. And especially when it comes to heavy-duty vehicles, time is of the essence. So these vehicles are used for commercial purposes, and we will need to find a viable way in which the owners of these vehicles feel incentivized to contribute to the energy system. So I think this will be where most of our efforts need to be focused, because the technological maturity of vehicle-to-grid solutions, I think, even though it's not there yet, it will develop quite quickly in the future. Currently, we only have a couple of models of vehicles that work with V2G on the market. Mm-hmm. So it is still a technology that we're not seeing explored to its full potential. And unfortunately, perhaps we do not see that much of vehicle-to-grid elements relating to adopted EU legislation on electromobility. But this will be indeed one of the next questions that we're going to have to solve quite quickly with the further increase of numbers of EVs on the road. So just to maybe sum it up, the future energy system is intrinsically connected with the future EV ecosystem. Those are two things that are completely inseparable. In order for them to operate, they need to be in complete harmony with each other.
Mm-hmm. At the point you made earlier about Europe kind of finding its global place in this system as well, I find quite interesting because obviously we hear the old adage, don't we, that Europe wants to be a rule maker, not a rule taker. We've seen that with things with GDPR and to a lesser extent so far, the Digital Markets Act, Digital Services Act, where the rest of the world is slowly singing from Europe's kind of playbook. Great stuff. Is that where you see Europe? Where do you see Europe actually putting itself in the same position when it comes to e-mobility as well? Is it setting standards? Is it basically just using these kind of systems and technologies that you mentioned so the rest of the world sees it and says, oh, yeah, that's pretty good. We should do that as well. Or is it a mixture of those two things where it's incentive, carrot, stick, the same kind of, you know, the way that the EU does business with other parts of the world? Or do we need maybe a new paradigm in how to get to the front of this race?
Yeah, indeed. I think this is some of the hardest questions that you've put here because unfortunately, there is no silver bullet. There isn't one thing that we can put on the table and say, yes, Europe needs to do this in terms of electromobility, maybe implement this new technology, and we're absolutely set and ready, and we're going to run circles around China and the US. Unfortunately, that's not how it works, and we do not have such an advanced, single-oriented solution that can provide us all the answers. So all of these various things that you mentioned would need to happen simultaneously. So Europe, of course, has been on the regulatory forefront with the Green Deal as a whole. As you know, the Green Deal has put forward an example for the global players how a continent can actually really implement the necessary regulatory frameworks to achieve net zero by a given date. I think that there's no doubt about the fact that Europe here is a global leader. And when it comes to more concretely e-mobility, again, regulations and standardizations are something that we're quite capable in producing. So the harmonization of these standards, the ensuring that all of these systems work and communicate between each other effortlessly, EMSPs, CPOs, DSOs, electric vehicles, in order to service the customer in the end, this on a regulatory level needs to be enhanced. But I think that we have very much good heritage in this, and in the European regulatory frameworks provide good basis to continue working there so that Europe can gain the competitive advantage that we need. And indeed, this will be something that we'll need to focus because on outright potential, Europe is not very rich in critical raw materials. Europe's manufacturing is not as strong as China's manufacturing. Perhaps Europe's legacy car makers do not have that much of a know-how in terms of optimizing electric vehicles as some US competitors like Tesla have. But at the same time, I think that if we manage to take a holistic view over this ecosystem and we do all of the things that we can and where we see the potential for us to cooperate as European companies, that is what is going to practically give us the edge. At the same time, it's important for Europe to remain open. It's important for Europe to remain a continent that does not fear competition. We definitely do not need for the acceleration of electromobility any trade wars. We do not need any trade barriers. What we need is smarter solutions and smarter approaches because I think this is where Europeans are the most advanced at. And I believe that some of our legacy car makers, perhaps if they choose to move towards cheaper, more affordable and smaller EVs, that will allow for a bigger chunk of those 250 million electric vehicles that we project in 2050 to in fact be European. We see also a lot being done in terms of battery manufacturing. Actually, our friends at Transport and Environment have a study that shows that more than 50% of Europe's needs in terms of batteries are satiated from batteries produced in Europe. Mm-hmm. So we also hear news like Northvolt's new factory that is foreseen in Germany. So the good news on that front are there as well. But again, unfortunately, it is quite a complex of a system, and we need to move forward on various different domains if we want to ensure our competitiveness.
You mentioned the role of car makers, and I find that aspect particularly fascinating because you'd like to think that legacy car makers, established names, are not just making electric cars in a bubble. They are actually thinking about these different issues, whether or not it's bidirectional charging or interoperability between different systems. Do you see car makers becoming more involved in that case, whether or not they see it as something they should be doing, they're incentivized to do it, or they're being forced to by regulations? Or would you like to see car manufacturers being more proactive, more active in actually engaging with these kind of issues and making sure that, like you say, there's only a couple of models on the market where you can do vehicle to grid? That needs to change. How do you actually make sure that car makers realize that that is something they need to be working on?
I think when it comes to automakers, the picture is very diverse. We have certain companies that have extremely high ambition when it comes to electrification, to electrifying their fleets, to making sure that their new production capacity is fully geared towards an electric future. And I think that those will be the ones that will stand to gain the most. And those are the ones that, in fact, will be the players with the necessary foresight to be able to tackle any competitiveness that comes from foreign third country car brands. The problem here is that the automaking industry as a whole in Europe seems to give off this the sentiment that they are not perhaps 100% certain when it comes to the path that they are choosing. And this is because we see other car brands in Europe that are not as dedicated as the ones I mentioned in the beginning in terms of electrifying their operations and electrifying their future models. So the question here is of internal company ambition. And it is quite clear for us as the European electricity industry that the future of transport, at least for road transport, is completely electric. The technological debate there is settled. We know companies like Amazon, for example, that are making vast purchases of electric vehicles. And for example, with the case of Rimac, which was the company from which Amazon purchased a huge number of their electric vehicle vans, they faced an issue of not being able to purchase such a large quantity of electric vehicles from traditional brands. So they had to invest in that company and in fact be part of the front runners in the field because simply the ambition and perhaps the flexibility of these traditional car makers in terms of electrification is not there yet. So we see that the market dynamics, the technological state of development practically showcases where the future will go. So instead, I would say, of seeing certain car brands fight against already agreed and negotiated Green Deal provisions, they should rather really, if they're worried about their competitiveness on global markets, look towards strategic adapting towards this new reality. And that's what's going to give them the opportunity to get ahead and perhaps in the process of that, come up with even better, more optimized technological solutions that why not see a European car company, an electric vehicle car company, come up with the next groundbreaking technological milestone in terms of electrified transport. But in order to see that, we need to really have all of our cards set in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Reading through your report as well, there were a few other things that really sort of struck me as quite interesting factors. And one of them was this idea of being able to roam across countries and charging your car and being able to obviously access it with electronic payments or details about how it's charging. Is that something that you see trending in the right direction where there aren't 1,000 million companies all launching their own app, their own services, and as a consumer, you've got no idea what's going on? Or do you think that we need I mean, it made me initially think of when we were back in COVID and the EU came up with the One Passport app, you know, where you need someone with that umbrella top-down view to say, look, we have this centralized system, it can be used everywhere. Or do you still think that there is room for, you know, private innovation in that space where you'll have many apps, many services, but they all will sing from the same hymn sheet and there won't be any contradictions there?
I think, Sam, you've hit the nail on the head with this question, because in the end of the day, everything that we do is to make sure that the customer experience is better, because what drives the EV revolution is customers. And the customers are used to a very easy way of using their vehicles, thanks to the internal combustion engines that have been dominating transportation for centuries practically already. And this is why we need to make sure that we optimize the processes within the e-mobility ecosystem that, as you saw, are quite complicated in a way that in the end of the day for the customer seems easy to use. We need to create services that are as close to driving an internal combustion engine vehicle as possible. Of course, customers will need to understand that this is a different type of system altogether. And a lot of the customers actually do understand that, and a lot of them are quite tech savvy and able to deal with the different challenges that sometimes do come up in the EV user experience. But the question is that if we want to make the spectrum even wider and have more and more of these vehicles, more and more drivers switching to electric vehicles, these questions need to be solved. And what you mentioned in terms of roaming, it is crucial. We need to make sure that the owners of these electric vehicles are free to travel with their car all over the continent, unimpeded, able to charge wherever they want to charge, whenever they want to charge. This is the main element that tackles range anxiety. This is the main element that tackles the hesitancy when it comes to purchasing an electric vehicle. And in order to do that, this is one of the main policy recommendations of our report, is that we need this data, this new digitalized ecosystem, to be as harmonized as possible. The standardization and harmonization of these roaming platforms is practically the crux of what's going to unlock the possibility to expand further the EV ecosystem. So in the end of the day, again, all of the things that we do and the main takeaway from our report is that this needs to be done in order to improve the customer experience. And once we have that system there, this umbrella that you mentioned, this unified European-wide approach, that's when more and more customers are going to be intrigued by purchasing an electric vehicle. When you know that you can drive easily from Berlin to Prague, for example, without having to worry that much about range or being able to charge or having your application accepted. And also a lot of, for example, companies do deals between themselves so that they can, for example, offer preferentially in the navigation system of a particular car brand certain charge point operators that have a contract with that manufacturer. Mm-hmm. So we need to go towards a direction where the entirety of the EV ecosystem stands to gain, and that there's no short-sight competitive gain by a certain car brand working with a certain charge point operator, because this might seem quite good and quite lucrative in terms of a direct cooperation between two companies. But as a whole, for the EV consumer, it is a burden. Mm-hmm. And we need to go beyond that. And this is why data sharing in an open, transparent way, standardized way, market dynamics ruled way is what's going to be the solution to this all.
Mm-hmm. It really goes back to that low-hanging fruit point you made at the top of the show, that these are simple, you know, these aren't structural problems that regulators have to deal with. They're quite not easy, but they aren't the most complicated problems that need to be addressed. I was going to ask you about the timeline of all of this as we move into 2024. Obviously, you mentioned the CO2 targets and other legislation that is driving EV adoption up at a record rate. We keep seeing new records being set. 2024 might not be one of those record years, but certainly 2025 and beyond promises to be quite significant in that regard. Do you see then this year as maybe a crucial year to get these kind of issues, perhaps not solved, but on the agenda more and to get people and regulators and policymakers thinking about it more, so that when these big numbers do start happening, manufacturers start putting smaller, cheaper cars on the market, we won't be playing catch up. We will actually be at a point where, yes, we have addressed these issues, we know what we're doing, we're in place. So do you think there is that urgency in a way that we need to think about this now?
I absolutely think that there is an urgency to it. And I think that 2024 is a decisive year, not only because of the European elections and the fact that this is practically stalling the entire legislative process within the EU, at least for a bit, but also because the prospects of what we might see after these elections is not, I would say, completely optimistic in terms of further development of the EV ecosystem. We're seeing that right wing politics and the culture war introducing of EV EV topics is what is probably going to make it even harder to reach a compromise in Parliament, in Council, on these key legislative topics. So the more this current mandate is able to do, the better it will be, in fact, for the overall ecosystem of electromobility. We have a couple of legislative pieces that are quite key. So we have the In-Vehicle Data Act. So this is something that we're expecting to see from the European Commission. We know that they're working on it quite actively, and we hope to see it practically as finalized as possible by this current mandate, so that it can be presented as quickly as possible by the Commission, because this will be one of those key pieces of legislation that can help us achieve these goals that we have set out in our report, that will tackle some of this these issues that we have identified. We also have the greening of corporate fleets, which is currently in the period of public consultation, mm-hmm. launched by the European Commission. We see quite a lot of issues when it comes to the fact that corporate fleets have not electrified as fast as they should have. And we see that actually private consumers are much more keen to electrify than corporate customers, which is a shame, because it is exactly corporate actors that have the ability logistically, through the systems that they already have established, to in fact electrify very quickly in a very efficient way. And we are unfortunately not seeing enough of that. So the greening of corporate fleets is really a key piece of legislation that will help us in that domain. And also flood a second-hand electric vehicles market, which is super crucial, especially for countries in Eastern Europe, where the purchasing power for new electric vehicles might not be as strong as that in Western Europe. So indeed, I think the golden formula here would be to try and extract as much as possible from this current mandate of the European Commission, to make sure that the policy officers there are as busy as possible until the elections in June, to prepare all of this and maybe have a smoother transition towards a new commission that we, of course, will have to work with, and make sure that despite perhaps a certain differences in terms of overall political desire to improve the EV ecosystem, they're going to see this importance of electromobility for the overall energy system that you so clearly evoked. So we do believe that it is a crucial time, and we have to do all of this, because the quicker we do it, the better it will be for the competitiveness of Europe as a whole on an extremely challenging global market.
Well, hopefully a couple of those policy officers that you mentioned will have been listening to this show, and they'll have realized the importance of a couple of the issues that we mentioned. Thank you for joining me for today's show. It's been really interesting to get into these issues, and also to, I think, get back to that point of how this isn't just about transport. This is about the wider energy system and how it can actually be a super important driver for different innovations that we mentioned, like smart grids, charging, stability, all of these kind of things. So really, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Sam.
Batteries, gigafactories, choice of car models, price are all important issues affecting e-mobility. But as we heard in today's chat with Ivan, low-hanging fruit like data sharing and interoperability factors need to be sorted out before they turn rotten and slow down the shift to green vehicles. Hope you enjoyed today's episode. Check out the link in the show notes for the full report that we talked about before. Now, just before we go, time for the answer to the quiz question. I asked you before the show, which of the EU's 27 member countries has the fewest number of EV chargers per 100 kilometres? Was it A, Lithuania, B, Cyprus, C, Greece, or D, Italy? The correct answer is Lithuania, with just 0.2 per 100 kilometres. Thankfully, as we heard in the episode, those numbers are only going to grow. That's it for the show. Join me again next time on the Policy Dispatch for another trip through the fascinating world of the energy transition.